like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Steve Mornelli, the founder and CEO of Waggle, a crowdfunding website dedicated to helping animals in need of veterinary care whose families cannot afford those bills. Of course, it's not uncommon to see crowdfunding campaigns for sick or injured pets, but as with any such crowdfunding, it's sometimes difficult to be certain if the campaigns are what they purport to be. The Waggle protocol eliminates that uncertainty. We'll learn how and hear other details about Waggle when I speak with Steve Mornelli in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, we'll present an animal news segment, something we haven't had an opportunity to do in a while. And we'll, of course, also offer an animal comedy piece and play Name That Animal Tune, another thing we haven't had a chance to do the last couple of shows or so. And, of course, as always, when we do Name That Animal Tune, you can win a fabulous prize. So that's all coming up later in the program. Right now, though, let's get to Steve with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663. And a caution, unfortunately, that I'm afraid the DJ email is down here at the station for the moment, which also means I cannot see or receive text. So I'm very sorry about this. But if you do want to participate in the show or ask Steve a question or offer a comment, there's still very much the option of calling 813-239-9663. So with that further explained, this is Steve Mornelli on Talking Animals. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
So I, of course, want to explore exactly how Waggle works, and including how listeners out there who may be in the exact kind of situation where they would maybe need Waggle's help could find out how to do so if they're looking at a towering veterinary bill to have their pet treated. But first, I think we should get to know the man behind the Waggle. So origin stories have really become vitally important on this show, sometimes because a guest's path is quite surprising from what their early years were like vis-a-vis animals, and sometimes because the story turns out to be making perfect sense with what their formative years were like. So what about your story? What did animals mean to you as a kid?
Well, I might prove no exception to that, Duncan. I think that lead-in fits my background exceptionally well. You know, I loved pets since I was small with, you know, the first cat that I had, Sam, all the way through pets that I've, you know, fostered and rescued over the years, all the way up to my current rescue, Gracie, who is looking at me diligently at the very moment. So, like many of your listeners, I'm sure, an avid pet lover.
Okay, so it sounds like you pretty much from early on in childhood and through, obviously, and including now, really always felt a kinship with animals of one kind or another.
Absolutely, and I think it was a sort of transformative moment in my life just a few years ago that really led me down a much different course than, you know, my experience, background, or even formal training led me to this juncture in creating Waggle in a way that I never would have anticipated. And I suspect many of your listeners have gone through certain periods in their life that took them in a direction they never saw coming.
Yeah, well, I absolutely want to delve into that. But before we do that, because something you kind of alluded to, since you have said that you did feel a kinship for animals all the way along, I'm just wondering if at any point, if that did recede almost just situationally for a time, like while you were pursuing degrees, we should point out, because this may figure into our later part of the conversation, that you have a BS in mechanical engineering, an MS in engineering, science and mechanics, and then an MBA in finance. So I'm just wondering if during the time, at least some or maybe all of that schooling, if maybe you still felt strongly about animals, but maybe just weren't in a position to share your house with them.
I always had pets, even through college, and even periods where one might have said, "Oh my God, how do you juggle both of this?" Right, having a pet through the through the travel and the different periods in life, different directions. But I always had a pet. It wasn't very long that I was actually without one at a given point in time. But during those periods, for all those years, I never thought I would be in the pet industry or in a position to make a difference at scale for so many different people and their families, and certainly pets across the U.S. I never anticipated that this opportunity would present itself.
Well, let's get into that, because I mean, you've kind of alluded to this sort of transformative moment, and any sort of biographical or other information about you usually hints at that as well. But I mean, I guess, as I've suggested a moment ago, I mean, you're in some ways a numbers statistics guy, a mechanical engineer, MBA in finance, etc. So the fact that we're talking about what may have pulled you into animals must have been quite transformative indeed. So what was this that we're talking about?
Well, as you correctly pointed out, the background was of a much different nature. By formal training, I was always in analytics and as an engineer, and then I worked in finance in Wall Street for a number of years, and macroeconomics and quantitative research. And so it had nothing to do with the pet industry whatsoever, but I always felt, and I always thought back to my grandfather's words when I was young, even before I went to college, and he said, "Do what you love and the money will follow." And, it sounds so simple in hindsight, but when you're young and you're off and running and you have these ambitions and motivations that, really maybe not be the smartest thing to do, it led me in a direction that I never felt quite at comfort. I always felt that I was missing something, and I wasn't really making a big difference. And, it was really during the financial crisis. I was working in investments and finance, and I started to get an awareness of some of the bad actors out there in the financial services in various industries, and certainly on crowdfunding platforms, and so much of the fraud and abuse that was out there. And I personally was looking for something that I could make a difference in the world. And I had obviously a passion for animals. And I was particularly looking for an intersection where I could bring my background in those quantitative type fields, analytics, but apply it in technology in a way that could really make a difference. And I had no idea it was going to be the pet industry, quite frankly. But one day an article came across my desk that sort of the light bulb went on, and I had this transformative moment, if you will, that in an instant, right, and you hear this from people, they had this clarity, and that was the moment that that gave me the idea about Waggle, and I can explain what that inception was.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it is interesting because, like you said, that along the years of getting your education and then getting your career launched, you always had loved animals, but just never imagined yourself like that those twains would meet. But it sounds like once that thing crossed your desk and you sort of thought about things, it sounds like there was a real epiphany.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I was clearly looking for something entrepreneurial, and I was receptive to different ideas. And this article came across my desk, and it was about Y Combinator. And probably a lot of your listeners don't know who they are, but it's essentially a technology incubator. And the valuation of the companies that they have now fostered is over $65 billion, right? So these
Wow.
are very, yeah, it's an incubator of small companies that have grown into large valuations of big companies. And this article was about their sort of very first philanthropic investment and an entity called WASI. And I thought, why are these industry veterans putting their weight behind this organization that is philanthropic in nature? And what that entity did was sort of bridge the gap between people in need and those that could most help them. So if we think about bridging the gap between, obviously, people, in their case, developed countries that were in need of medical care, and then bringing and connecting those to donors here in the United States that could make a real difference for a low amount of money. In their thesis, it is sort of high impact, low cost approach. And that's when the light bulb went on. I thought, what? Not only was these technology innovators thinking forward and making a difference in the world and putting their weight, their money, and their expertise behind it, but they had made a difference in tens of thousands of people's lives around the globe, and getting rid of all the waste that's in the middle, where everyone's taking a little piece of the pie. And I said, why can't we do that for the vet industry and make a difference in the lives of these over 500,000 pets that are lost every year for no other reason than people can't write a check. That was the moment, Duncan, where it was the epiphany for me.
So was the article mostly about Y Combinator and stuff, but in your head, were you thinking about just whether anonymously or maybe you know specific people who had been faced with a huge vet bill, this cat needs surgery, this dog needs ongoing treatment for cancer, let's say, or whatever, who said, hey, God, I couldn't love my animal more, but I cannot swing that bill.
Well, for me, it was a little more personal. And how I kind of, I thought about it was, and I had never done this before, and I'm looking at my dog, Gracie, right now, right, this 15-pound rescue. And if your listeners do the same thing, if you think to yourself, I have to pick up, in my case, great, I have to pick her up and hand her across the table and give her to somebody else because I can't write a $500 check. That, to me, is horrendous. And that's the point where I said, you know what? Even if I help people raise $500, $700, $1,000, what a difference this can make, right? That, to me, was when the light bulb went on. I said, we can do this, and we can do this as well. Yeah.
Okay, well, I definitely want to get into more of that. Let me just let folks know who might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and if you did just tune in, my guest is Steve Mornelli, the founder and CEO of Waggle, a crowdfunding website devoted to helping animals in need of veterinary care whose families cannot afford their bills. If you'd like to ask Steve a question or offer a comment, the moment we only can offer you the option to call 813-239-9663, as I mentioned at the top of the show. Unfortunately, at the moment at least, our email system is down, which also means that texting, which comes through the email, is not available. So again, you do have the option, though, to participate by calling 813-239-9663. So Steve, I mean, in recent years, just general crowdfunding campaigns have obviously just proliferated, and whether they're seeking to raise money for everything from underwriting making a new album or a film for an artist or director, musician, to helping defray the medical costs for a friend or colleague who's got a medical struggle of their own without insurance or maybe they're underinsured. And so with the huge increase in the kind and quantity of crowdfunding campaigns, unfortunately, of course, there's also been a corresponding rise in fraudulent campaigns or just outright scams. In fact, just it was interesting. I just sort of stumbled into this the night before last with our conversation kind of pending that NBC News ran a big piece about the rising incidence of scams in the crowdfunding world, and just that there can sort of be fictional or phony duplicates of legitimate campaigns. They showed one example was the campaign launched in the wake of the New Zealand massacre, and side by side, they showed the identical looking ripoff. And so again, if you were in a hurry and you thought, well, let me help out, you wouldn't know that you were donating to the phony one or the real one. So one of Waggle's, I think, distinguishing traits is that someone donating to one of its campaigns wouldn't have to worry about this kind of fraud. How so? Why?
Well, that's exactly why I started Waggle, right? Because if you think about so many people that are leaving $25, $30 tips, they can probably some of the you can least afford to give. And nothing made me madder to think that in so many instances with the GoFraudMe's of the world, you do not know as a donor where your money goes. You just don't. You don't know if the pet is real. You don't know if the pictures are real. You ultimately don't know where that money is going. And that, to me, is one of the how we can change the face of crowdfunding, both with the Waggle Foundation and our crowdfunding platform. So we took great care in setting up all of our software and our business model that says when people donate, that money only goes directly to that veterinary hospital. We never put it in the hands of the consumer. We never put it in the hands of the animal welfare agencies. It goes to the veterinary hospital, period, and under all circumstances, 100% of those donations. And that's the key, one of the key differentiators about Waggle, because I saw so much of it coming out of the financial services industry, I knew that there was no other platform out there that does it at scale and does it with the security and the peace of mind for donors that we offer.
Well, no, that's got to be a huge thing because, I mean, just generally, any of us who've helped out one way or another to a GoFundMe or a Indiegogo or whatever it might be, if you do read, most of us don't, but if you do read the fine print, I think most of those somewhere in there, they're basically sort of, I think, covering themselves saying, fact, like, this donation you're making may not get to the intended recipient. Or I mean, they obviously don't use that language, but in effect, that's what they're saying. thing because there are so many steps along the way that can compromise the process.
Well, that's exactly right. And I encourage all of your donors to look at these things with a discouraging eye, right? To say, wait a second, ask these questions. Where is my money going? Are they taking a cut of this? What's the propensity for bad actors? You really know where that money's going. We've taken all that off the table. And what's really important about this is why the large foundations have stepped in and helped support WAGGL, things like Maddie's Fund and GreaterGood.org, big well-known entities, and we've attracted the quality of board members that we have, like Dr. Marty Becker and Liz Baker from Greater Good, tenured veterans of the industry that support our mission and what we're doing. That right there is a signal that says we are really off and running and making a difference in the world with some really core backing. And if you think about it, what really keeps our lights on and help us grow is corporate sponsorships as well. And so that's something that corporate sponsors cannot get behind an organization like GoFundMe or some of these other platforms you mentioned because they're at risk. Because what happens when invariably they have somebody that is not doing what they're saying they're doing? They can't put their names behind them from a reputational standpoint. But we're finding that the sponsors are stepping in and saying, wait a second, these guys are changing the face of crowdfunding, and there's a security here that gives them comfort in being able to back us.
Yeah, well, that would seem to, again, make all the difference. And so I know you've mentioned that you brought to bear your experience and career knowledge from the financial sector, but what sort of research or preparation did you do along the way that might correspond with that in speaking with either vets or animal hospitals about, again, maybe how some of the mechanics of WAGGL should work to serve them as well as possible?
Sure. Great question. We spent a lot of time doing our research up front by sitting down with the heads of large veterinary emergency and referral hospitals around the country and bringing them on as advisors. So we understood some of the root cause problems that are going in the industry from a veterinarian perspective. And if we think about going back to these other platforms, they don't really care about the veterinary industry, right? They're industry ambivalent, quite frankly. As long as the money traverses those platforms, they're happy, and it's pure volume at the end of the day. For WAGGL, we set it up to be industry-specific around the veterinary industry, and I can talk about that, what that means from an ecosystem perspective. But from a foundational perspective, we actually sat down, talked with the veterinarians, talked with the heads of these hospitals, and we actually came to find out a lot of really interesting information, things about not only economic euthanasia and the 500,000 pets that are lost every year, right, very conservative number, but we also understood that compassion fatigue was a term that I had never been introduced to. And what does that mean? It means that the veterinary staff and technicians, people that have gone into this industry because they have a love for people and pets, are being called upon day in and day out to do things they never really thought they might have to do on a regular basis and has put so many of these pets down. That is a wear and tear on staff that has resulted, I don't know if your listeners know this, in the highest suicide rate of any industry in the United States.
Yeah, there's been a lot of coverage about that lately, and in the back of my mind, I have in mind to do some sort of panel show here where we would get various vets and maybe others that could speak to that, because I just find that so disturbing. I mean, suicide anywhere obviously is upsetting, but it just seems that there's some key factors, including the extremely high cost of going to vet school relative to generally what most vets can expect to make early on in their career. But yeah, as you say, the compassion fatigue, there's just a lot of things that seem to play into this. And I just think, like I say, that's something I would like to explore in a future show. But let's back up for a minute, because I think it's so important to this conversation. And again, I think obviously important to the way WAGGL was designed. Can you sort of say more specifically what economic euthanasia really means and what that translates to?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down in very simplest terms. The loss of life for so many pets that are being put down that whose pets may never even see treatment simply for the fact that they don't have the finances to pay for the cost of care, right? And we think of how this might cascade through the industry, right? Maybe pets are put down before they even see a vet, and people anticipate, well, I can't afford this. Or maybe they make a first visit and they find, well, this is just too expensive and I have no other options because you know, our local charities and animal welfare groups are already overtaxed and overexhausted from, you know, and limited resources. It's really that it's that number of pets that are being lost for purely economic reasons. And it was a term that was new to me, even coming out of the, you know, the economics industry. But I learned it firsthand in our first conversation, you know, you asked about research, and that was, you know, the economic euthanasia and the compassion fatigue coupled together is where we, you know, the other differentiator about waggle.org is that, you know, we're tackling some of these biggest problems in the industry and trying to give back to the industry professionals.
Well, yeah, it seems like just inherently what Waggle is set up to do would really kind of be addressing both things, both the economic euthanasia and the compassion fatigue, because, again, as you just explained, the economic euthanasia is some even worse, like you say, in anticipation of what the cost might be, but I guess more commonly would be people who are presented the cost or the bill of what it would be like to treat Rover or Muffy or whoever, and just say, oh my God, I cannot swing that. And so then they just feel like they have no choice. So meanwhile, the vet in that situation is going, oh my God, another one I'm going to have to euthanize, even though they could come through this treatment fine.
Well, that's exactly right. And if we think about the whole ecosystem here, that is the real difference about waggle.org, right? And so not only are we specific around this cause and this mission, but we are principally focused on the entire ecosystem where, in our view, the more people that participate, the more people that win. I think this is an instance where the sum is greater, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? Is if we think about the local community, we think about that individual pet owner who finds himself in a dire situation, they may go out to their local small mom and pop vet who may in turn refer them to a large emergency and veterinary hospital, right? So we have a chain of players here, if you will, in the vet industry. But around those groups, not only do we have the local community, we also have those small rescues and shelters and other people that are integrated with that network. But if we then even roll that up further and we think, how does this impact and how do the larger organizations, whether they're corporate sponsors or foundations, that whole group, all the way through those networks, extending out from the Pet Guardian through their friends and family and social media, that whole ecosystem is what we can collectively address, right? If we all play a little role here, and if Waggle gives back to that whole ecosystem with the support of each of these players, what a difference we could make, right? That's the power of crowdfunding. That's how we change the face of crowdfunding from what you and I read in the newspaper and your listeners pick up every single day, right? Oh my God, another bad actor on GoFundMe, right? Another, somebody else absconded with $30,000 or $40,000. That's why we are principally focused on the veterinary industry and why we limit the amount of funds that any particular pet owner can get, because we really seek to help the largest number of people that we possibly can.
So that raises, I guess, a question that I'm not quite clear on so far, having recently stepped into the Waggle world. To what extent does Waggle focus more on larger vet operations, veterinary chains, in fact, hospital chains, et cetera, and could small hospitals or just, as you've said a moment ago, mom-pa vet operations still be helped through a Waggle campaign?
Well, I think they're actually in many ways our core participant, right? Because I go back to the underlying philosophy of Waggle is how do we empower people and individuals and in local communities to help themselves, right? You know, we aren't out there writing checks. We're not funded by a billionaire behind the scenes. I wish we were. It would help. But the reality is if everybody helps just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
That's the power we have here. So my philosophical view on this is if we make this easy to use, if we make it streamlined for the pet owner who finds himself in distress and may not be equipped to actually go out and start their own campaign and on one of these other sites, because we're streamlined and we ask the right questions, we know how the processes work with our local vet. My personal view is if we make it easy for them, then we make it easy for the small practice. If we make it easy for the small practice, well, you know what? We can do so for the larger veterinary hospital that is probably running at a much bigger and faster pace and so on. So I think it starts small and it grows bigger throughout the value chain.
So let's run through this then. Let's say that I have a cat that seems to be developing kidney issues. We're not quite sure what's going on. This is actually true so far. And even just the initial exam and labs and stuff were, you know, like $400 or so. So let's say that we're still working on the diagnosis, but this is not a big vet hospital. This is just like a kind of a local place where we really like the vet and like the treatment that all our animals get. So let's say that the diagnosis was such that it was something quite significant. And I thought, oh my God, okay, I just don't know how I can face this bill on my own. And then I thought, hey, I just spoke to Steve Mornella the other day on the show. Maybe I can pursue Waggle. So walk me through how I representing obviously anybody that had a similar situation with a vet bill that they just couldn't quite handle, but obviously wanted to keep the animal going and healthy and treated. What are the steps? What do they do?
Well, we've made it about as easy as we possibly could. All you really need to do, all anyone really needs to do, is to go to waggle.org, and there's a sign-up page. And there's three different roles. It could be as a pet owner, as an animal welfare agency, a nonprofit, or as a veterinary hospital. In your situation, obviously, it's a pet owner.
Mm-hmm.
In just 3 or 4 minutes, you can create an account, and there'll be a button that says create a campaign. It's that easy. What do we do then? Right? Here's another thing I want to point out to your audience. We then take that pet owner is presented with a series of questions. They're as simple and as easy as we possibly can, but they're geared and thought-provoking that we want to extract the story, the meaning of the history of what's going on here, so we can convey that to the audience, the benefactors. And that means it's already templated, structured in a way that we can make it as easy as possible. So people have to go out there and figure this all out under a time of rest. When they give us that raw content, right, including a few pictures, which is very key, there's one other element that we ask for, and that is that treatment estimate that you would have received from your veterinary hospital. Why do we do that? We do that because, as we started the conversation, we want to know that someone has taken the time that actually is a veterinarian behind the scenes. Someone has taken the time to go out and say, hey, my dog really is in a period of medical crisis. And importantly, we actually know the financials behind this, right? We don't want to be raising $2,000 for someone when they need $400, as you mentioned.
Sure.
That's that check and balance. And then in that process, the Pet Guardian would select from our search list if their hospital is already a partner with Waggle. Given that we're operating nationally now and in Canada, there's probably a high probability that that veterinary hospital is not a member of Waggle. But when it's determined in just a second or two that they're not, an invitation box will pop up, and it sends an invitation to that hospital to join Waggle. That way, we've brought that many more people in the ecosystem. That veterinary hospital will receive 100% of the funds that we raise. We've closed that loop.
Yeah. So, obviously, if they're not already participating, assuming they don't have any reason to think, well, why would I join Waggle? It'd be more like, why wouldn't I? There's no downside, obviously, for the hospital, and it's going to help me and help me get the treatment for my cat or whatever. So I assume that's just happens like automatically, like there's no hesitance ever when someone does receive that invitation or a hospital does receive it, the vet does receive.
I would say that about 95% of the hospitals join. And
yeah,
when 5% don't, then you kind of scratch your head. And then if you reflect on it for a moment and you think back to the earliest part of our conversation, well, they don't know us, right? It takes time, and they're thinking, oh my God, who are these people, right? It's just the reality of the world that we live in. But our reputation has been so strong, and we're growing so quickly that as time goes by, when they take the time to look at our board, when they see the organizations that are backing us, oh, and certainly if they have a conversation with them, the light goes on, and they're like, well, wait a second, we get 100% of the money that's raised. That's a very high success rate. I would point out in that process, sorry to interrupt you, but I would point out in that process, the one thing that we're doing for the pet owners that no one else is doing is, we actually have professional writers behind the scenes that take that information that we receive and craft those stories. So if your listeners go out to waggle.org, they'll see that these stories are very consistent stylistically and well-written. We have a former New York Times editorialist that leads a team of writers. So we're very diligent about how we present this to the general public. And And that's something that just no one out there is doing this for the
community. Just back briefly, Steve, to that 5% so far of veterinarians or veterinarian hospitals that are saying, hey, I don't think so, or I'm not sure. Is it just because when they're presented with the information, it's like, well, this is too good to be true? I mean, I haven't heard a waggle before, so what you're presenting to me here, just, I guess there's a level of skepticism maybe that some people might say, we're going to kind of sit tight on this.
Yeah, I love that expression because I got those exact words yesterday from the chief medical officer at one of the largest hospital chains. We had a good chuckle together, and they said, well, this sounds too good to be true. And I'm like, but it is true. And that's the beauty behind it, because they do discover that it is true. And that's because, you know, we're not out there trying to make $1 billion, right? $3 billion. You asked about initial research that we had done. Over $3 billion goes across that platform of GoFraudMe, right? And wow, you just have to say, wow, how do they do it? You know, they have a tenure, they've been around for a while, but then again, you pick up a newspaper and you read something bad. That's the part where we don't aspire to that. We have no interest in that, right? Yes, we have to keep the lights on. Yes, we have to grow, but we're giving back to the industry. And you asked why I got in, to kind of bring it back to the beginning, is I want to look back in 3 years, 5 years, and go, you know what? We're making a dent, a real dent in those 500,000 pets that are lost. And to me, that's not mom and pop. We didn't set this up to help 100 pets a year or 1,000. We're setting this up to help tens of thousands. That's where we want to be. That's going to be the real win for everyone.
Okay, well, I definitely have some more questions, but let's get a caller involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Steve Mornelli.
Yeah, hey, I like what you're doing. I don't know if this is exactly the appropriate topic, but I think it is that, like with our own doctors, we want to think that the only reason they do what they do is because of altruism and they want to heal. But I've known people in veterinary school and veterinarians, and they tell me that a significant portion of treatment that they suggest is upselling, that they're capitalists, they're in business for profit, and sometimes, and this is horrendous, they even exaggerate the severity of symptoms or diseases that they're telling the pet owner so that they can make more money. And I think everybody should be aware that capitalism corrupts everything. When you go to a veterinarian and they drop a huge bill estimate on you and tell you that your pet's got to have this and this and this, it's just like when we go to doctors, could be they're upselling you. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm not coming from the veterinary industry as a medical professional, right? But I got to tell you, I see my experience has been in the last couple of years is quite contrary. I'm finding that so many of these hospitals, the owners, the managers, the vet staff are some of the most heartfelt, hardworking people I've ever seen. You know, it's like anything else, right? It's a bell curve, and you're going to find some bad actors at the tail end. But by far and above, this is a reason that the industry is suffering so much and why organizations like MightyVet.org have stepped in and we're partnered with them, is to address the weight that is bearing down on them from a financial perspective. I think the statistic, and I can pull some of these for you, that you're probably aware of them, these are not financial heavyweights in most instances, right? There are so many of these practices and hospitals are struggling financially, right? And so I might kind of take that from the other side, right? I think it's, sometimes we see the negative because we some bad press, but my experience so far has been on the opposite. I think it's just an amazing group of people I don't think the general public necessarily see what they're going through on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I will say, too, that this is a separate conversation, so I'm not going to really bring it in other than just as an example maybe of what the caller could be referring to. Is one of the things we've talked about periodically on this show is the process of declawing cats and just sort of the multiple downsides to that. And I think it's been determined that at least a lot of the veterinary practices that offer that, really that is a sort of a profit motive as much as anything, since there's generally speaking no actual good reason to declaw a cat. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation for other shows that we've had, and we can have it again in the future. But all I mean is that there are some who have offered that just because they are sort of boosting the bottom line, and sometimes you go in and you take a cat for the first time and it's like, well, we want them neutered or spayed, we want this, we want that, and as part of the package there would be a declawing thing. So, but generally, I think you're right, Steve, hopefully, is that the people that you're dealing with and just generally the people that are in the veterinary field are really very concerned with treating those animals and not doing anything to pad the bills. And let me just let folks know again, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Steve Mornelli. We're in the final moments. He's the founder of Waggle, a crowdfunding website that assists people whose pets are facing expensive veterinary treatment beyond what they could otherwise afford. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663. Again, unfortunately, today we don't have email, and therefore we also don't have the texting capability, but you may call and get in the conversation in our final few moments here. So, Steve, if I'm not mistaken, you guys launched about a year ago. I think it was last March, in fact. Is that right?
We did. We launched in March with our beta test, and then based on the lessons learned, we updated the platform and went live October 4th.
I see. Okay. So how much in the combined campaigns that you have been involved with, how much would you say the site has raised thus far in total?
Well, we're in the hundreds of thousands of dollars at this point, and we're really coming out of our beta test and our early launch. And the really interesting part about this is the rate of growth, both in terms of donations that we're raising, number of campaigns, and certainly the number of hospitals are joining. And that's the really exciting part about this is the trend.
That's great. And what's the most expensive treatment thus far that Waggle has assisted in paying for?
Well, I want to point this out. In all cases, at this moment, our cap is $2,000.
Oh, okay.
And we did that for a reason, right? And we might increase that, and we certainly might increase it by the amount of matching dollars that we get from our sponsors. That's a really important part of what we're doing now. But we capped it at $2,000 because we wanted to help the greatest number of people that we possibly could. And it's, you know, kind of the Pareto rule, right? I mean, you know, 80-20, that yes, we could go out and raise $50,000 for one particular pet, but that's not ethically where we want to be in operating. We really want to do this to help the largest number of communities and people possible.
And to what extent have you found that since you have the, I guess, more official launch, is it been a range of campaigns? Have they been right around 2,000 generally? Have they been a good deal lower? Is it sort of really quite an array at this point?
I would say that they typically run about $1,500 to $2,000 typical request. And,
yeah.
And that's because, you know, we're generally doing those cases, again, that are aspiring to prevent economic euthanasia where there's a medical crisis going on. So we tend to issue those cases that are, you know, at the very low end of the range. And, you know, we do get them, but for the most part, they're nearing our cap, and I think that cap is going to go up marginally based on sponsorships.
Sure. And so while we're talking about money-related things, here's the $64,000 question, perhaps. Who came up with the name Waggle?
It's kind of a funny story. I did, and I said, Waggle, that's it. And it's waggle.org, right?
For your, yeah.
And it was this older gentleman that owned the domain, and I called him up, and I said, I saw that he wasn't using the website. He hadn't been using it for 17 years. And he was on the golf course, and he said, well, call me back tomorrow. So I called him back the next day, and he was on the golf course again. And he said, well, you know, call me back tomorrow on the golf course. So we did this like three times. and then he said, hey, let me guess. I bet you want to buy my website, because he obviously had gotten that question many times. And
yeah.
I said, I do. And he said, and I thought he was going to ask a lot of money for it. And I told him we were a nonprofit and what we're up to. And he said, well, how about $200? And I said, how about $200 and a case of wine? Deal. And
wow.
That was it.
Okay. That's some tough negotiating there, Steve. That's great. But yeah. Well, on a more serious note related to sort of the finance stuff we are discussing, so Waggle is obviously designed to help defray these up to $2,000, pretty staggering for most of us, veterinary bills. But how exactly does Waggle make a living? I know it's nonprofit, and I know you've got these key sponsors, but is it still taking a percentage or a commission on each campaign, or how does it actually work?
We never take a percentage of the donation amount. So 100% of your donation amount goes to the veterinary hospital. That's a key component we do. Because we have to pay a credit card fee, usually about 3.5%, we assess an 8% fee on top of the donation. So, and 98% of our donors, they get it. They're like, you know what, we have to cover the cost. I mean, if we had a billionaire funding it, we could underwrite this. But it's a small transaction fee that allows us to keep the lights on and to pay the credit card fees and the maintenance of our software and all the marketing that we have to do to help these people. So that small fee, the donor has an option to leave a tip if they want, $1 or $2. Those add up. But where I'd like to do is get to a point where we don't have any fees whatsoever on top of the donation, even though they're small as they are. But how do we do that? It's really around these partnerships, and it's around corporate sponsors who want to bring the goodwill of what they are doing towards the veterinary industry to reach the veterinary professionals and reach the consumer. That's the exciting part, especially as we continue to grow in numbers. We're seeing more and more sponsors call us up and say, how do we get involved and give back at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think people that are involved with crowdfunding things are used to the tip element, and so I would think that's no one has any kind of particular issue, especially with the idea that the donation is going directly through, and again, some of the concerns about fraud or abuse that go with other crowdfunding sites is eliminated.
Well, that's, you know, and one thing I didn't mention that I think is really neat, and I hope your listeners find it as well, is a lot of these other sites where when you give your money, not only do you not know where it's going, but you don't know the difference that you made. We actually take the time to, in our software, to go out and request an update from the pet owner after the treatment has occurred. And we bring that back to every single donor that participated on that campaign so people can see actually firsthand the difference that they made. And we're excited about that, right? Who does that at scale?
Yeah.
That's the neat part.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's got to really make people feel good about it. And again, next time they see a campaign and have a few bucks they can spare, I'm sure that makes them more inclined to say, well, yeah, this worked out so great last time. Let me see if I can help this person this time. So,
exactly.
So we're just about out of time, Steve. We have maybe a minute. Let me ask you so far, you know, again, relatively brief time, what your favorite or most notable case of helping an animal and their accompanying human with one of these campaigns?
One of my favorites was one of the earliest ones we did, and it was a pet named Kusa, and the owner was a woman that lived in Rhode Island who, and you'll see a video of this at our website, and I kind of paused, I think, because it's sort of heartfelt. It was a woman that lived in Rhode Island who, I think like many of the people that find themselves on our site, never thought they would find themselves in this situation, but yet she gave us her time and her energy and allowed us to film Kusa and her. And why did she do that? Because she believed so much in the help that we were providing and what we were doing that she, you know, many people would be shy to this, and she wasn't. She came right out and said, listen, I never thought I'd be in this situation, right? It was part domestic violence. It was part economic hardship, and it was just falling on bad times. And so to close that loop on all this conversation, right, why did you do this? Why did you get into this? Because that right there is that part that hits you right in the middle of the chest that says we're making a difference, right?
Yeah.
And to me, that's the sort of case. Every morning you want to get up and do it again.
That's great. All right, Steve. Well, we've been speaking with Steve Mornelli again. The organization is Waggle, and the website is waggle.org, so you can find out more. And if you might need help with a vet bill, you can go there. If you might want to help out those who are having a little bit of a trouble with their vet bill and see some of these stories of people that have already been helped by Waggle. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and good luck with the ongoing success of Waggle.
Thank you, Duncan, and thank you to your listeners as well. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Thanks again. In a few moments, I'll present an animal news segment, the first we've done in a while. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. This is Daniel Sloss with a piece I'm calling Gay Penguins in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
I was in Edinburgh Zoo, and the reason I was in Edinburgh Zoo, and I was with the penguins, I was allowed to go in there and interact with the penguins, and the zookeeper person I was with was going around, and she was like, and this is where they eat, and this is where they sleep, and this is where they swim, and these are our two gay penguins, and I went, what? She went, these are our two gay penguins, and I was like, one more time, please. She went, these are our two gay penguins. I was like, why did you show me anything else? Wasting my time with giraffes. Tell the rest of the animals to take the week off, because this is the zoo now, okay? And the reason they are gay penguins is the greatest reason I've ever heard. As an audience, can you tell the difference between a male and female penguin? No, neither can most male penguins. Okay. and penguins mate for life. So what happens is, one penguin will be walking along and he'll drop his keys or I don't know, but he'll bend over. And one of the other ones that hasn't been paying attention will just be like, damn. And he'll run up and he'll have his way, and then he'll come back up and he'll start low-fiving all of his friends because penguins can't high-five. Yeah. And then the other penguin has to stand up and turn around and say, like, yeah, dude, it's Steve. What are you doing? And the first penguin's just like, ah, well, according to penguin law, together forever. Now, she tells me this story, and I am dying with laughter, right? I am happier than I've ever been, and it gets so much better, right? Turns out a couple of years ago, at Edinburgh Zoo, it came to mink season, right, for the penguins and all the zookeepers. And all the straight penguins start having their sex, two gay penguins, they start having their sex, right? A couple of weeks later, all the female penguins start to lay their eggs. Two gay penguins, they didn't lay an egg. And they were confused by this. Because they've been doing what everyone else has been doing, let's be honest, probably more. Living for the weekend. And they had nothing to show for it. And in their confusion, they wandered around their enclosure until they found a rock that was slightly egg-shaped. And they just assumed that this was their egg. That's how it worked. So they put it on their feet, they waddled it back to the nest, where they then spent the next couple of weeks, every hour of every day, taking it in turns, sitting on this rock, waiting for it to hatch, which is obviously adorable, but only because they're penguins. If your friend turned up to your house with a stroller and a boulder, just... Karen, get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. This is unacceptable. Put the rock back. I know it's mine. I saw you pick it up. So the zookeepers were heartbroken because they knew what was going to happen. In a couple of weeks, all the female penguins' eggs were going to hatch to beautiful baby penguins. And the two gay penguins, their rock wasn't going to hatch because I'm not explaining that. But fortunately, in captivity, sometimes female penguins get a bit excited by all the penguins, all the male penguins there, and sometimes they have too many eggs. So the zookeepers took one of the extra eggs and they gave it to the gay penguin parents. And if you go to Edinburgh Zoo for whatever reason, you can ask any of the zookeepers, you can Google this story, there's at least one penguin in Edinburgh Zoo that has been raised by gay penguin parents. And it is no different from any other penguin except that it's slightly better dressed.
That was Daniel Sloss with a piece I've titled Gay Penguins, taken from one of his appearances on Conan. Coming up at 11 on WNF is Rob Lori with Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lele. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott and the All Souls Edition of It's the Music. Meanwhile, on this show, well, let's just try to get to some animal news. As promised, probably the biggest story that seemed to make the rounds in the last few days. A suspected rhino poacher in South Africa was killed by an elephant before his body was apparently devoured by lions. Authorities said a search team in Kruger National Park was only able to recover a skull and a pair of pants. South African National Park said that the victim and four accomplices were trying to poach a rhino Tuesday evening. The accomplices called the victim's family and said that he had been killed by an elephant. The initial search party was unable to locate the body. During a search Thursday morning, authorities found the few remains of the suspected poacher. Indications found at the scene suggested that a pride of lions had devoured the remains, the Park Service said. Also a fairly big story in all senses in the last few days, more local. Locally, though, was a slithering 17-foot Burmese python found at Big Cypress National Preserve in the Florida Everglades, weighed 140 pounds and took four people to carry. What might have been even more unnerving for conservationists anyway was that it contained 73 developing eggs. That's because the Burmese python, as the name suggests, is a non-native species in Florida that is considered invasive and harmful to the area's ecologies. Researchers at the preserve, as they have done with other female pythons, euthanized the huge snake and destroyed the eggs. And our neighbors in Cuba had their first march to end animal cruelty, at least what's being considered the first time. This was allowed. The organizers said this march marks the first, the before and after in the protection of animals in Cuba. So I consider it to be a historic event. Sure seems like it. And I think that's We have other things we'll maybe get back to next week, but we have reached the end of Talking Animals on WMNF. Again, Rob Laurie is up next. And next week, I hope you'll join me when my guest will be Renee King Sonnen, founder and executive director of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary, which, after King, who was a cattle rancher's wife, who went vegan, then helped convert the facility from a calf-cow operation into a farm animal sanctuary. So lots of interesting stories there. Hope you'll go to talkinganimals.net for all our links to Facebook page, Twitter feed, Instagram, and more. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Rob Laurie is up next after NPR News headlines. Thanks.